This is Ottawa at Work with Leslie Roberts on News Talk 580 CFRA.
I can't get over the competition here in Canada to become one of the hub cities for the NHL. They're pulling out all the stops. They're putting together promotional videos. And the question is, what for? And I get it with a professional sports team, specifically in this case, the NHL. There is money associated with the game. But what is the benefit for Edmonton or Toronto or Vancouver to actually become one of the hub cities? It's not like they're going to do a lot of tourists. No, people aren't going to be there. It's a bunch of players who are basically locked up and then training and then locked up and then, you know, getting ready for probably Las Vegas. Anyway, we're going to decide hopefully today or here today which of the cities in Canada, if any, will become one of those hub cities. Let's talk about the economics behind it. Moshe Lander is an economist with Concordia University. Welcome back. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure.
So what is the financial benefit? And they've already, like, for example, I'm thinking of the Alberta example, specifically the Premier Jason Kenney put a video together. He put it out there. What, aside from, I guess, eyeballs, are they going to get?
Yeah, not much. You know, I mean, they're going to get maybe, say, 1,000 people, 2,000 people locked down, creating some economic activity that otherwise wouldn't exist, whether that's through food services, municipal golf courses when they want to get out in between game days and have some recreation, a little bit of the local economy benefits. And really, that's not replaceable at this point. It's not like you said, you know, you're not going to have tourists coming in or anything like that. So, you know, I guess the cost is rather low. And this is maybe one of those cases where there's some benefit, but the way that they're falling all over themselves and your sight of Jason Kenney there, it's way over the top for what they will get.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think. So I guess they rent out the arena, so there's money there. There's talking about it in sports circles, which is right now, that's not bad either. You know, remember when Edmonton or Vancouver hosted during the COVID year? But other than the political motivation here of appearing to be doing something for their province or their city, there's not a lot of, you know, return on the investment.
No, it's not going to be a job creator. It's not going to be an engine for future growth.
Yeah.
When teams start getting eliminated, they're not going to say, you know what, it's such a beautiful place, why don't we hang around Edmonton for another month? And I'm saying that actually as an Edmonton resident and taxpayer. I mean, you know, I live there, but hey, it's you know, not a place that is necessarily a tourist destination. And these multimillionaire players are probably not going to appreciate being cooped up in Edmonton into October when Vegas is sitting there as a Western city where you don't have to worry about crossing the border, even though the government has eased regulations for them coming in. I don't know that they want to be necessarily locked down in Canada if they don't have to when there's another city just waiting for them.
Is this about a spirit thing for Jason Kenney? Because it's been a rough go for Alberta even before the pandemic because of oil prices. And we saw the real estate market tank. Sorry for that. And, you know, just the whole challenge that they've had. And is this, we'll do anything to try and lift the spirits and be able to say we're on the right track. We're back, Edmonton.
I think all of them are doing that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the cost here of putting forth your name is pretty minimal. And if there's any benefits that accrue, it comes at really minimal cost. So I think that all of them are motivated to just play cheerleader at this point. And, you know, really, I think that, like I said, for the Western hub city, I'd be shocked if it's anything other than Vegas. And the only thing that can really stop it is just another COVID outbreak that makes everybody say, wait a second. You know, the competition for anything is in the East. And, you know, Toronto at least maybe has a more compelling case just because it is a large city. And if you're going to coop up, you know, 1,000 to 2,000 people, at least give them something to do rather than isolate them geographically.
Well, there's also potential for going all wrong. I think of the Blue Jays as Major League Baseball tries to ramp up. They're in Dunrobin for obvious reasons because the U.S. border is closed right now. And I kind of say their players and some staff are testing positive for COVID-19. That could also backfire.
Yeah, I mean, that's a completely different story. So, you know, which ones are the best hub cities? Fine. The fact, should this even be going ahead, I'm totally against it. And I'm saying that as a sports fan. This is not the time to be pushing this ahead. I miss sports. You know, teams that I cheer for would be in the playoffs right now, and I can certainly get behind that. But you know what? The reality, just even from a sports standpoint, is is what you're watching the legitimate culmination of the season that was interrupted 3.5 months ago? So when you see somebody lift the Stanley Cup or win the Larry O'Brien Trophy in basketball, are they really the champions of that season, or are they the champions of a 6-week mini coronavirus competition where players are choosing not to sit out? And at what risk are you putting some of these, you know, 60, 70-year-old workaholic coaches and trainers that might have pre-existing conditions, let alone the players themselves? We're seeing in U.S. colleges, players are contracting this all over the place. I just don't think it's good optics, especially if somebody does die.
But you know, the owners are putting a lot of pressure on the leagues. Come on, we need the money. And given the fact there's so few sports that are actually live right now, think of the number of eyeballs and the ad revenue potentially here.
Absolutely. And it is exclusively a money exercise. So speaking with my economist hat on, right?
Yeah.
These leagues make their money in the postseason because you don't have to pay the players their bi-monthly salary. There's a pool of money that's allocated to the players for playoffs, and it's based on when they exit, and the rest of it's all gravy. Now, usually that's the ticket revenue that's making the money here, but you know, broadcasters are desperate for live content. It's, you know, when you can DVR something or just time shift to whatever works for you, live events are one of those things that just can't be time shifted. And so beyond just the contractual obligations that they have with their network partners, it's the networks themselves that are also saying, hey, there's a lot of money at stake here too, because we have advertisers that would love to be able to have live broadcasting where we know there's a captive audience.
And the bottom line is money. We got to remember that. And there's lots of it potentially here. Can I use your economist cap for me and get some advice? Because the city of Ottawa is facing a $192 million deficit this year. There are very few revenues, of course, happening right now. All the programs are shut down. The ridership on our public transit way down, 80% to 90%, depending on the week. And at the same time, the mayor has also promised that he will not exceed, or at least he's saying at this point, will not exceed the promised going into the pandemic 3% tax increase. And he is literally saying we're being ping-ponged back and forth between the federal government and the provincial government as we try and cry for financial help. How are we going to dig out of this hole?
Really badly.
Yeah.
It's a problem that's plaguing every municipality across this country, and in the U.S. too. Municipalities rely on a huge amount of their funding sources coming from the provinces, right? It's transferred down to them, but they have very little capacity to generate their own revenues. You know, how much money can parking tickets and municipal golf fees and public transportation generate in a large budget that has to encompass things like the local school board and road repairs and, you know, in Ottawa itself, the fact that it's a federal city, again, they're going to rely even on federal government transfers as well. So, you know, when the city shuts down, they basically have to go cap in hand even more than they generally do to the higher levels of government saying, please give us. But the fact is, they don't have any money either these days. Canada was just downgraded by Fitch in terms of its credit rating. You know, it's a terrible situation, and it's not one of those types of things that you can just jack up, you know, parking ticket fees in the coming years to make that up. So what you're really going to see is a huge amount of cuts coming in the next, you know, 3, 5, 10 years, whether that's attrition of municipal employees or just offloading things that were normally done by the government and trying to sell it off to the private sector just to raise some cash.
Yeah, that's to cut the future bleeding from happening. But when in the meantime, we still have quite the wound. That being said, I cannot see how, I mean, aren't property tax increases inevitable everywhere?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's going to be on, it's going to be on residential, it's going to be on commercial, it's going to be on industrial. And it's really going to be one of those kind of catch-22s that if you move out of concert with, you know, local competition. So if Montreal, Kingston decide that they don't want to move kind of in lockstep with the way that Ottawa moves, how much business could you lose, or how many people could you lose that decide that they want to migrate out or even just to the suburbs around Ottawa itself rather than in the city itself? And so it could really create medium to long-term damage if this isn't done carefully.
Safe to say the HST will go back up as well, because that's a cash cow potential. I think it's $20 billion just by returning it to what the level was before Stephen Harper cut it.
Yeah, and I don't see a way that, you know, like like I said, being an Edmonton resident, and we don't have a provincial sales tax there, I don't see a way that you can get away from provincial sales tax as a source, because at some point, we are going to get back to spending again. And so they're going to have to try and recoup it that way. And we're going to start to see things like even a COVID tax, where maybe, you know, the municipalities decide to start introducing their own surcharge, you know, 0.5%, 1% on every transaction, as a way to try and pay for all of the extra staff that they had to take on to deal with the COVID crisis with, through the healthcare system or any other parts that were affected.
Maybe another cent a liter gas tax? Possible?
Yep. Yeah. It, if you can imagine it, they can do it. At this point, it's just wherever they can try and squeeze. You know, it's the idea of just trying to squeeze as hard as you can without breaking.
Is this a five-year plan before or longer than that to get out of this?
I think it's a generational thing. I think that we're seeing one of these pivotal moments in an economy where, you know, I was talking to somebody yesterday and saying, this is going to completely change the way that we commute, the way that we live. All of us that are realizing we can work from home, all of a sudden now we need to change the way that we use our living space. And maybe that means we need bigger places to include home offices rather than just converted spare bedrooms. And once you start going down that path, how does that change the commercial market? And what does that do for property taxes there if those things become empty buildings and high rises used for nothing? So there's a huge shakeup that's coming. And I think this is one of those moments where we're going to look back in a generation and say that was the point where things really started to kind of change the way we live and how we pay for things.
It's almost like we were on a tightrope and we were taking the risk. Oh, don't worry, we're not going to fall. Boom, we fall. Do you think we'll learn anything? Or is this, we're going to find ourselves this way again when our memories are short?
It's a little bit of both, right? So I think that kind of the analogy I was using was, you know, in the aftermath of September 11th, 20 years ago now, right? Think about the way that we viewed traveling in that particular short-term aftermath. We were all saying at the time, things will never be the same again, and wow, it's a point of no return. And, you know, it has changed the way that we travel and our experience going through airports and things like that. But after a while, we just kind of learned to accept it as that's the cost of doing business here. I think kind of 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we'll be having that conversation saying, well, I guess this is just the way things go. You know, we don't handshake meetings anymore when we meet somebody so I think the way that the economy is going to function too is going to kind of shift, and the way that we're going to try and generate tax revenue to pay for services is going to shift as well, because there's clearly going to be some sectors that just aren't around in the next 5 years, and sectors that jump up that we never even imagined as a response to this.
A century later, there won't be a roaring 20s, it sounds like.
No, it may be something about this decade that leads to an inevitable pivot.
Yeah, 100 years later. Moshe, thank you for appreciate your time this morning. Great conversation.
Anytime.
Moshe Lander, economist, as you heard, from Edmonton, but he's with Concordia University in Montreal. 11:19 coming up. We have the dubious distinction.